For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
My name is Liz Sweet, and I am, oh, I guess I'm on that thing. I teach classes here at Xenos and do a few other things. I'm going to talk today about this great topic, waiting on God. And I mean, the waiting's the hardest part, how difficult it is to wait. All right, so how well do you guys wait? I mean, we in our culture, not so great. I thought of a few things that make me irritated: being in lines and drive-thrus, traffic jam, waiting for a text, although I've never had to wait like this for 2 years to get a response. I have had reactions sort of like this, crying. I have reactions waiting a lot like this, and sometimes just fretting and worrying about what is going to happen. So we all have problems with waiting. And actually, these things are a little bit superficial, right? Like, these are things that do make us mad, but they're not the most important things that we wait on in this life. So what are some of the things that you guys just, like, shout out, things that you have struggled with waiting for? What are some things, or your friends, you've heard someone struggled with it? Spouse, like getting a spouse? Yes, absolutely. Wait, someone say something? Oh, getting ministry. Yes, absolutely. Developing personal ministry. That's a huge waiting thing. Is that what you meant? Or like people doing the right thing? Because that could be another slant. Waiting on other people to do what they're supposed to do. Yeah. Yes. Trying to get some wisdom when things are, when you're not quite sure what to do. Absolutely. Character change. Yeah. A lot takes a lot more time than standing in a line at, you know, some, like, waiting in a drive-thru. Yeah. Yes. Do you mean that you've struggled with wanting comfortable circumstances? Yeah. Or, okay.
Things are just not going well. And waiting.
Exactly. Waiting. Waiting for all of this stuff to go away so that I can just have some comfort instead of having some hardship. Absolutely. Any other thoughts out there? Those are good.
Baby.
Waiting for a baby, yeah. So you guys have named some really difficult things. You know, if you're waiting for a spouse, that is really hard. If you're waiting to have a baby and all your friends are having babies, that is super hard. If you are somebody who really wants to serve and give your life away and you haven't been able to yet find a way to establish ministry, that is really hard. All of these things are very challenging. So why is it hard, do you think, to wait? Right, out of our control, a lot of things. Yeah.
We live in a culture of instant gratification.
We live in a culture of instant gratification, absolutely. There's no question about that. The most, I mean, 20 times more than when I was a kid. Yeah, like by nature, we can be very impatient. Yeah. Comparison, yes, absolutely. Looking around and seeing that someone else has something and you don't, that is very painful. Yep. Hard to see your friends suffer. Hard. Someone in the earlier one said, waiting for their, like when I was trying to share my faith with my dad, I waited until the very end of his life to find out if he ever received Christ. So like things where you're like waiting for someone maybe to understand something, or maybe they're going through something, very hard. What? Yeah, like not knowing. I mean, there's obviously many, many, many things that we wait on and we have no idea what's going to happen. Right, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Or maybe, sadly, I hate to say it, sometimes never. So that's also, you know, it's hard because it's unknown, or it can just be long and we just don't know the answer. Yep. Okay, cool. All right.
It can feel like God's not doing it.
Right. Definitely it can feel like I am waiting and God is not doing anything at all. So all of those things are really good answers. The truth is, waiting super hard for all those reasons. It's hard to be hurting. It's hard to be, no one mentioned, you know, personal illness or illness of a family member. It's hard to have very fallen, painful things happening in our lives. It is just when we feel like we don't understand why or something that's out of our control, it's just very painful. I love this. This isn't in your notes, actually, but Psalm 13 kind of shows us this pain. It's like, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? That's how we can feel about this stuff. Interestingly, the end of Psalm 13 says, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. Like, what does it look like to wait? Why do we wait? And for those of you guys who are really, really suffering with hard things right now in your life, unfortunately, we're only here for an hour. So it's going to be a little bit more of a broad view. So I just want to, you know, just let you know that, you know, those things also are answered by the things that we're going to talk about, but they won't feel like, you know, it'll feel like a little bit of a broad swath instead of, you know, actually drilling down to some of the more personal things. All right. How we shortcut God in our waiting. There's lots of ways, but basically it's all summed up in our own solutions. We shortcut, we short circuit what he wants to do by focusing instead, drilling down on our fear or worry. I've allowed myself to get so fearful and worrisome sometimes that I just like act and do something and like without even thinking about whether it's the loving thing to do, the right thing to do, just because I'm like overwhelmed with this. Sometimes some of us will shrink back and be self-protective because we don't want to be hurt. Of course, anger is a huge thing that comes into play. Jealousy, like Keegan was saying about the comparison, and taking control. But all of these short circuit ideas are things that we a lot of times just take into our own hands because we are in this pain. We're having a hard situation. We don't know what the answer is. And if there's anything that we can do, we're going to be drawn to try to do it. So before I get into a little more personal reasons why we wait, I wanted to just hit three kind of broad reasons why we wait. And in Christianity, actually, there's tons of waiting. So the first one is that the whole creation waits and depends on God. He created everything and he sustains it. So Psalm 104 says, O Lord, how many are your works? In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your possessions. There is the sea, great and broad, in which are swarms without number, animals both small and great. They all wait for you to give them their food in due season. You give to them, they gather it up, you open your hand, they're satisfied with good. You hide your face, they're dismayed. You take away their spirit, they expire and return to their dust. Let the glory of the Lord endure forever. Let the Lord be glad in his works. This is a picture of what one thing the whole, it's hard to, like we kind of think we're self-sufficient, but actually the whole universe was created by God and is maintained by God. If he chose to, he could choose not to provide for the creation. And so that's one reason we wait. We also wait because the world is not our permanent home. For those of us who have a relationship with Christ, the Bible's clear that actually our citizenship is in heaven. And so we wait, like it says in Romans 8, for we know that the whole creation groans and suffers with pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. And what this is talking about is once we have the Holy Spirit and we have a relationship with God, we actually are more, we're looking forward to a new home, to actually be with Christ face to face. And so we actually, the Bible several places talks about how the whole creation actually groans with this idea that we would like to have this perishable life swallowed up with the imperishable, which is going to happen sometime. But that's something that makes us wait because that's something that we don't get to experience yet. And then also we wait because nothing in a fallen world functions right. And this is just basically the idea that the world is not right the way it is. And luckily for us, God is going to set it right someday. But here's a great quote by Paul Tripp. It says, "Sin brought friction and trouble and pain and sweat and a thousand other thorn and thistle complications to absolutely every aspect of life. We find ourselves waiting because everything in a fallen world is more laborious and entangled than it really ought to be. Processes and people are all affected. Everything and everyone has been damaged by the fall. We must wait because in a world that's broken, everything we do is harder and more complicated than it was ever meant to be." And so part of the waiting in this world in the general sense is just that things are not the way they're supposed to be. So waiting on God is actually normal and regular in this world. For anyone who has faith and lives in a fallen world, it's actually a normal thing. We often are like, hurry up and bring that comfort in here because I'm done with this hard stuff. I don't want to wait anymore. And actually what I'm saying today is, I'm sorry to say, it's a normal part of the of life and of the Christian life. So, why do we personally need to wait? Some of this is a little overlap, but it is a little bit more driven to affect us personally for understanding why God might be calling us to wait in certain situations, because it's hard to understand that. So one reason is because God is sovereign. He knows what's best. We think we know what's best, but he actually knows what's best. Isaiah 55:8 says, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." And also in Isaiah 40:28, it says, "His understanding is inscrutable." It's hard for us to understand. It's beyond us. His wisdom is beyond our thinking. And so one reason that we have to wait personally is because sometimes he knows something that we don't know. And that is very challenging. Consider Joseph. Oh, I'm going to mention a couple Old Testament figures. One is Joseph. One is Abraham. Because I think they're both great examples of people who had to wait. So in Joseph's case, he was favored son, sold into slavery by his brothers. Then he was raised up into a leadership position and then dashed down as accused of rape, then raised, then also like esteemed again because he's able to interpret dreams, but then forgotten about. So basically you get the picture. It's like he would have like something good happen and then his hopes would be dashed. Something good happened, dashed, good hopes would be dashed again. So, but then at one point he interprets a dream. He's in Egypt. He interprets a dream about how there's going to be this great famine. And Pharaoh is like, "You need to stockpile food so that we won't starve to death." And he becomes a very important official in Egypt. Well, his brothers, they're part of the famine. And so they come to get food from him because that is where the food is. And so here's the guy who was sold into slavery by his brothers. And he's had to wait through years to think about like what his brothers did to him. But when he meets them, he says in Genesis 45, "Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life
God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over the land of Egypt. So here we have an example of a guy who had every reason to be bitter, angry. He's had to wait for unjustly, and yet something has happened to him in terms of his perspective. He sees that God was doing something all along, even though it sure didn't feel like it. And so we see the result of him waiting and the fact that he continued to trust God, because now he's able to have a perspective that's quite different from just a normal human perspective. We also closely related to the fact that God is sovereign and he might be doing something that we don't know about. We also wait because God is on his own timing. 2 Peter 3:8 says, Beloved, do not let this one thing escape your notice. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. He's on a different timeline. He's infinite. So for us, as we're hurting and grumbling and dealing with like something for a week or a year or years, it's not the same for him. He doesn't view it that way. So it's important for us to understand that he is very different from us in what he's trying to accomplish. This is a quote from the Green Letters. It says, most believers have difficulty in realizing and facing up to the inexorable fact that God does not hurry in his development of our Christian life. He's working for an eternity. Just a different perspective. And then also we wait because growth and change take time. You don't go from being an infant to a 21-year-old in a day. Any kind of growth takes time. It is not going to happen overnight. So here again, a quote from Paul Tripp. It says, in calling us to wait, God is rescuing us from our bondage to our own plan, our own wisdom, our own power, our own control. In calling us to wait, God is freeing us from the claustrophobic confines of our little kingdoms of one and drawing us into a greater allegiance to his kingdom of glory and grace. Waiting is more than being patient as situations and other people change. Waiting is about understanding that you and I desperately need to change, and that waiting is a powerful tool of personal change. God is using the grace of waiting to change us at the causal core of our personhood, the heart. So as we're thinking about how we want to get out of this hardship, God's actually saying, I want to use this to produce growth and change in your life. And you need it. You need that in order to have more fulfillment. Just think of Joseph. When Joseph was young, one of the reasons he got sold into slavery is because he told his brothers about a dream he had that they were all going to bow down and worship him, and he was like the favored son. Just think if he had immediately gone to Egypt to run the food source. He definitely would not have been ready for God's task. And many people in the Bible don't start, like Moses is a great example. His best work starts when he's 85. Like sometimes God is doing something, and that change and growth that we need, even though we feel hurt about it and we feel impatient, we actually need him to, we need that time to actually become the people that God wants us to become. And also, we wait because the goal of having a relationship with Christ is a relationship. And a relationship takes time. Actually, the Bible teaches that the most important thing that we can do in this earth, if we look at, well, one important thing is obviously winning more people to Christ and telling them about the great forgiveness that God has. And also, the other thing that Paul emphasized so heavily in Philippians 3 is the idea that our goal is to know Christ. Everything else is worthless when compared to the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. I want you to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. I want you to suffer with him, sharing in his death, so that I want to suffer with him, sharing in his death, so that one way or another I will experience the resurrection from the dead. Here's Paul in an ultimate waiting situation. He's either going to be put to death or he's going to be able to get out and still continue to serve. And he's focused on this idea that the most important thing that sums up his life is knowing Christ personally. And so if we believe that, we need to realize that a relationship with an infinite God takes time, and that he might be using something like waiting in order to get our attention, because if we don't have to wait, we might be just content to do things our way. And he's trying to teach us that he wants to draw close to us. He wants us to prioritize knowing him as the most important thing. We're focused on getting what we want, and God is focused on us knowing him and being changed by him. It's a really different focus. Will we set our hearts on this goal? This is, if you're, like, one thing today, and I'm going to talk about, like, how we can base our hope in the character of God. But if there's one thing that you take to heart today, it's this idea that God wants a relationship with you, and that knowing him is the most important thing you can do, and you're going to be able to carry that to eternity. And that, so as we look at putting our hope in him, we realize that one of the keys to that is really knowing and understanding him. So it's something that we should all contemplate. Are we willing to set our hearts on this goal of knowing him? My clicker doesn't always work. Larry Crabb wrote a book called Shattered Dreams, and in it he says this: the highest dream we could ever dream, the wish that if granted would make us happier than any other blessing, is to know God, to actually experience him. The problem is that we don't believe this idea is true. We assent to it in our heads, but we don't feel it in our hearts. So again, isn't it true? It's easy for us to say, yes, I know Philippians 3. I know that the most important thing is knowing Christ. But do we believe that that is actually going to bring more fulfillment to us than the things that we think that we need so much in our waiting? Do we actually dare to believe that some of these things that are very important to us are not as important as knowing Christ, and that he can give us fulfillment even if we don't get some of the things that we want? It's a hard topic. So the word wait, what it means is to mostly, okay, there's a bunch of words that are translated wait in the Old and New Testament, and most of them are summarized as to look eagerly, to expect, to look for, or to hope. There is one other word that means to be still, but the majority of them are this idea of looking eagerly, of waiting eagerly. And so when we think about what does it look like to hope, I mean to wait, what it looks like, I'm calling it as confident expectation. It's not just doing time. So, you know, sometimes you go to the doctor's office and you're in the waiting room and you're thinking to yourself, this is a waste of my time. Like, I need to just get in and get out. This is not going anywhere. So, but I'm just going to put up with it because that's what that's what I have to do. That is not the same as confident expectation. That is doing time, waiting in a way that's very passive, where there's nothing that you can do. But confident expectation is the idea that we are waiting, knowing the character of God and knowing that he will be able to make a difference in our lives. So like you have this Psalm 135, it says, I wait for the Lord, my soul does wait, and in his word do I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than the watchman for the morning, indeed more than the watchman for the morning. That means, you know, if you're a night watchman and you're waiting to get off your shift, you're waiting for the sun to rise, you're pretty sure the sun's going to rise. I mean, you've seen it before. You're pretty confident in that. He's saying our soul is more confident. We wait more confidently in the fact that God is going to do something. So waiting means anticipation, expectation, confident hope in something that will take place. So the reason that we can have a confident expectation is based on who God is. And so again, going back to this idea of knowing him, we need to know him. We can have confidence in his character, and I'm going to briefly talk about these three qualities of his character that are particularly helpful for us as we're waiting. He's faithful, he's powerful, and he's loving, or good. I'm using good too. It's loving, but I think we struggle with wondering if God's good. So I'm putting that word in there too. Andrew Murray, in his little booklet called Waiting on God, he says, it must also be clear to us on whom we're waiting. Not an idol, a God of whom we have made an image by our conceptions of what he is. No, but the living God, such as he really is in his great glory, his infinite holiness, his power, wisdom, and goodness, in his love and nearness. He's like, what's important and the reason that we can have this confident expectation is who we're hoping in, who we're waiting on is the living God. The living God who is great in glory, who's infinite, who's got power, who's got wisdom, who's got goodness, and what's always remarkable to me, can be near us. So we've got this great God who actually we can have this relationship with. But that's the God that we need to be aware that we are expecting, that we are putting our waiting on, this God who is able to do something. So one quality is that he's faithful to his word. That's one reason that we can have this expectation. In Psalm 105:7, it says, he's the Lord our God. His judgments govern the whole earth. He remembers his covenant forever, the promise he ordained for 1,000 generations, the covenant he made with Abraham, swore to Isaac, and confirmed to Jacob as a decree, and to Israel as an everlasting covenant. So this is the idea that he keeps his word for 1,000 generations. If you study this aspect of God, he keeps his word. He's faithful. So when he says something, we can confidently believe that he's going to come through on that. Abraham was a great example of this, experiencing this, understanding his faithfulness to his word. In Romans 4, it says, without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened, or other translations say grew strong in his faith, and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. So he's aware of the promise. He's told that they're going to be able to have a kid. He knows they're too old. And he's willing to step out in faith on that promise because he knows that God is faithful to his word. It also ties in the next one, which is being fully persuaded that God had the power to do it. which is also another attribute that he's powerful. Isaiah 40 says, "To whom then will you liken me that I would be his equal?" says the Holy One. "Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars. The one who leads forth their host by number, he calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing." Again, hearkening just to the strength and power of God, that he is able to call all the stars by name, that he created them, that he knows the amount that he knows and what he's responsible for. He is powerful. And again, Abraham, in Hebrews 11, it says, Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. And this is the story that after he has a child, then God calls on him in faith to take his child to sacrifice him. He actually, in the end, gives him an animal to sacrifice. But what we see about the progression of Abraham's thought is he's going there and thinking, well, wait a minute, God promised that he was going to give this kid to me, and now he's telling me to kill this kid. But what he's thinking is, he said he will give me descendants. I'm going to believe that he could raise him from the dead if he needed to. So you see that movement and strengthen, as it says in Romans 4, his faith has been so strengthened by seeing the faithfulness of God and the power of God work in his life and acting on that. And then God is loving and good. Psalm 27 says, "I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord." And then Romans 8 says, "What shall we say about such wonderful things as these? If God is for us, who can ever be against us? Since he did not spare even his own son, but gave him up for all of us, won't he also give us everything else?" This is emphasizing, this is okay, Siri, this is emphasizing that he's so loving that he gave his only son so that we could come into a relationship with him. So if he did that, he is a good and loving God. The reason I picked these three attributes is because I think in our minds, these are attributes that we really fight against. These are the things that come in and haunt us a little bit, like God's not actually good. He doesn't want what's good for you. God's not actually powerful enough to do anything in this situation. God's not actually faithful to his word. So these are things that we really wrestle with and don't believe a lot of times, or they're the things that we need to combat for sure. So I'm going to ask this question a few times, but what will you guys put your hope? Waiting usually reveals where we've put our hope. You know, when we're waiting for something and we're mad about it, it reveals something about what we're hoping is going to be the thing that's going to fulfill us. And here's again another great quote by Paul Tripp. "If your hope is in your power, you will find it extremely difficult to live through situations where you've been revealed to be powerless. If your hope is in your wisdom, you will find it extremely difficult to deal with circumstances that simply make no sense to you. If your hope has been in a certain person or situation, you will find it very hard to deal with it should that person or situation radically change. Think about it. If my hope and confidence were really in the wisdom and power of the Lord, I would not find this kind of waiting so hard. Waiting is hard precisely because it calls us to live by faith and not by sight." And so if we really, you know, this is just something to, you know, for all of us, it's like it's a constant theme actually in our lives, because we have growth, we see God do things, and then he brings us to another place where we have to again commit to whether we actually believe him. So as we're going through these different times where we're making decisions like that, we need to continue to come back and look honestly at what are we putting our hope in? Do we really believe that these things are true? about God, that He is the one who's able to fulfill, that He is the one who's able to bring about something good, even though it feels so bad in our lives right now. All right, so then we get to the practical. And the practical, yeah, this is where, you know, I'm never going to be able to solve all these problems that everyone has. And unfortunately, I'm like, I always want to solve problems. So, but what's interesting is the practical is kind of a contradiction. It's be still and act. It's, or another way I put it in the notes is rest in God's character and timing and act on the things you know from the Word. And the idea of resting, what's interesting is that even though we use a word like rest, I put the word consider up there because it's actually, even when we're meditating on and thinking about God's timing and God's character, it's actually, there's an active part of that. It's not like we just dig a hole and wait a couple weeks and hope that He takes away the thing that's bothering us. It's not that we just like sit around and don't do anything in hopes that somehow if I just wait long enough, this thing will be gone. It's a part of our mental, the way that God has designed us so that our mindset needs to be active. And a lot of what we do, a lot of how we live our lives comes from having our minds transformed. And so when we're resting in God's character and timing, we are trusting, but we are also actively reminding ourselves of who He is and what He's going to do and what is true about Him. Because left to our own devices, we automatically go back to, what am I going to do about this? How can I take care of this situation? So these things, so choosing to trust His timing is really the idea of pointing ourselves in the direction of God and believing that He is going to do something to fulfill us. Now, it's not always going to look the way we want. And I'm not going to read both these verses, but I want to say that what's interesting is that in the Bible, often we ask God to incline our heart. So we need His power. And also, we are told to turn our hearts to Him. And so this, you know, I don't know if you guys have experienced this in your life, but man, I can tell when I'm like turned away rebelliously from God and I do not really want to hear what He has to say. And when I'm leaning toward Him and it's like, it doesn't have to be like that much. It's not like you have to be like, oh, I'm 100% in. I mean, He takes a small portion of faith of looking to Him and just saying, okay, God, I'm scared, but I'm in. He is able to work with our feeble attempt. But in order to trust in His timing, we got to be turned toward Him. We have to look to His answer and His solution. Also, related to this is spending time meditating on truth and what He's done. So this is hard work, actually. This is where we actually have to cling to what we know is true of Him and His love. And this is especially important in these painful, long situations where we can start to be worn down and feel like, I'm not sure that this is going to be something that He's going to come through on. And, you know, I want to recommend this book, Shattered Dreams, if you haven't read it. But that book by Larry Crabb, he talks a lot about this idea of, you know, looking to see that God is good, even if what is happening doesn't work out the way we want it to. And it's been actually pretty life-changing for me in terms of realizing some of the hopes that I have that maybe I might have to come to terms with the idea that they might not happen the way I want them to. And can I still view God as good if that's the case? So this idea of meditating on truth is really immersing our minds in who God is. And I love these little questions here, like kind of ask, reflect it. Like part of meditation is reflecting. So is what light has he shown you? What has he shown you that you can maybe act on? Are you willing to reevaluate your motives, attitudes, values, and priorities? If you figure out that he's got something different, are you willing to maybe reevaluate yours? I had a situation where someone very dear to me was making a decision that and a lot of people thought it was a really good decision, and I did not. And it wasn't a harmful decision. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like any kind of immoral or anything. It was actually like a step of faith. But I was like, I don't think this is a good idea. I got gripped with fear about it. I was like crying about it. And one of my friends, I was telling her about it, and she said, hey, have you thought that God might be doing something here that you can't see? I was just kind of like, oh, maybe. Because I was like, I need to intervene. I need to change this. I need to go after this. And it was great to have a friend who was able to say, like, you might need to reevaluate. And sure enough, 2 years later, it's actually been a really great decision. And maybe it wouldn't have been, and then I would have had to deal with that. But it's interesting how quickly we can get gripped by our own fear agenda and think that we've got to just do something now about it, even in situations where maybe the thing we're talking about is not, it's not that bad. Now, there are situations, of course, where you might be gripped with fear and you need to do something about it, like if somebody's in harm or something like that. But in normal decision making, we need to look at our motives and values and priorities. And then act on the truth that you have. So like in this Psalm 73, it says, wait for the Lord and keep his way. So that this is the idea of taking faithful steps. We all have, there are always truths that we can follow, even when we're waiting. So this is things like practicing one another's, being engaged in fellowship. If you think about Christ in John 13, Christ was in the intense waiting moment at the Last Supper, waiting to go to his death, the worst thing ever. And what did he do? He washed everyone's feet. So like in these times when we are sad and when things aren't going well, what is God calling us to do in terms of loving other people? How can we use what we're learning and what's going on with us to actually go ahead and step out in faith anyway? And also, of course, let other people serve you, because that's another thing. I mean, some people just sort of keep those things to themselves. They're suffering silently. They withdraw. And if we're going to be part of a Christian community, we need to serve others and allow them to serve us. And then cultivating an eternal perspective. 2 Corinthians 4 says, our present troubles are small and won't last long, but they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see now. Rather, we fix our gaze on things we cannot see, for the things we see now will soon be gone, but the things we cannot see will last forever. This is priceless for helping us with times of waiting. This life actually is not all there is. If we can get that perspective in these hard times and realize, even though it seems like forever, it really is not. And if we can look to the fact that we have a hope beyond this life, it can do wonders in terms of giving us the stamina and the perspective that we need. And then look for and be grateful for his provisions. He actually does give us provisions. You think about the Israelites, they had food and water out in the desert and they grumbled the whole time. Well, not the whole time. Maybe there was 1 minute that, but you know, he actually does provide for us in these hard times. And it can be hard to see sometimes. And I am not in any way trying to give like a quick answer to someone who's going through something super hard. But God is capable to provide for us. And so if you look at a verse like Isaiah 43:19, it says, "Behold, I will do something new. Now it will spring forth. Will you not be aware of it? I will even make a roadway in the wilderness and rivers in the desert." Do you know what he's saying? That we can easily take these times of waiting and lose sight of what God's doing because we're so focused on our own pity or our own hurt or our own what we don't have. We're so focused on that that we're not able to look beyond to see that God's doing something. And he's like, hey, I can make rivers in the desert. I'm actually a powerful God. I can make a roadway in the wilderness. But will you miss out on what I'm doing because you're so obsessed with getting the thing that you think you want? And that is a great question for all of us when we're in this situation. What is God doing? I do not want to miss out on that. That could be the best thing that could happen to us. It definitely has been the best thing in my life many times when I've been in a really hard situation, not knowing what the outcome was going to be, and being able to draw close to God and seeing the way he was working despite that hardship. There's almost nothing sweeter than that, to be able to see his hand at work despite some of the hardest situations that we're in. So my question is, will we settle for less than what he wants for us? You know, we have all these, I'm not going to read all these, but you know, like Esau and Abraham are great examples of settling for less. Now, Abraham did, he first did try to have a baby because it was seemed like it was taking too long. He did first have a baby with Sarah's handmaid, and God was like, that's not the promise. So he tried to short circuit it too. Esau sold his birthright, which was a huge deal, for a bowl of stew. Are we going to be like that? Are we going to be like Psalm 106? They forgot the God who saved them, who had done great things in Egypt, miracles in the land of Ham, and awesome deeds by the Red Sea. Are we going to forget what he did? Are we willing to say that God is not enough, that God doesn't know what he's doing? Are we willing to boldly look at our God and assert to him, you don't know what you're doing? What do you want to hold on to rather than experiencing what God wants to do in your life? What is so important that you want to hang on to? I have a lot of examples. I'm not going to give them all to you. But, you know, I've done things like before I was married, I started secretly dating a person who didn't have a relationship with Christ because I just decided I wanted to have this boyfriend instead of like waiting to see if God might have a spouse for me who did want to walk with Christ. Lately, what God's doing with me is teaching me that when I see something that is wrong, I want to like race in and make sure everyone knows that that thing that happened was wrong. And I don't mean like a moral thing. I mean like an injustice of some sort. And I'm just learning from the Lord, like there might be a time for me to hold back on that and figure out what his priority is and wait to see if one of these 10 things stands out as the more important thing. So there's lots of ways that we can give in to our own thinking and doing instead of waiting to see what God has for us. And they range from everything that can have super dire consequences to things that are really just day to day, you know, choosing not to actually meditate on who God is and going about my life like I'm an atheist, you know, like it's a wide range of not drawing close to him and waiting. So the benefit of waiting is that it strengthens us, which I already talked a little bit about Abraham. Here's this famous verse that you have in your notes, so I don't feel like I'm going to read it because of time. But basically, it's the idea that when we do wait on God, we do gain strength. Seems backwards. Like, if you wait in a line, you do not gain strength, right? You're like, if I'm at Disney World and I'm waiting, I'm not like, well, I might be saying I am in the happiest place on the earth, but I'm not feeling like, oh, I feel so much energy now since I've been standing here in this line. But with God, it's different. It's like when we resort to our own strength, we actually run out of power and steam. And when we wait on him and draw on his strength, we actually have renewed strength. So when we look to him and his way, it's a little bit of a thing about our relationship. It's a little hard to actually pinpoint how this happens. It's like we have the Holy Spirit and we choose to listen to what he says, and then we take a step of faith and we continue to take a step of faith. And before we know it, we've actually grown in our understanding of who he is and what he can do. So it's like we are strengthened by this. We saw that with Abraham, which I already read that verse, but in verse 20 it says he grew strong in his faith. And we saw that in his life, that he was even stronger when it came time to consider sacrificing Isaac. Paul Tripp puts it this way: why did Abraham's faith on the whole grow stronger and stronger? Because of what he did as he waited. During his wait, Abraham became a student of the character and power of God. And the more he saw God for who he is, the stronger his faith became. That's how it works. As we become students of who God is, and we take seriously his word, and we choose to act in accordance with what he says, instead of in accordance with whatever our feelings are of the moment, it actually strengthens us. It yields the, you know, as it says in Hebrews, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness, actually. It makes us, those parts of us that are feeble, actually stronger. It also builds character. And I think this is something that we have to remember. Again, a goal of God is to cause growth. So in Romans 5, perseverance brings about character, and character brings about hope, because we see changes. And a benefit of waiting is that it teaches us to love other people. How are we going to weep with those who weep if we haven't experienced that? How are we going to, as it says in 2 Corinthians 1, how are we going to comfort those who need comfort if we haven't allowed God to comfort us through our waiting and our hardship? It will not be something that we're good at if we don't allow ourselves to wait. If we take care of everything ourselves and never experience the person of Christ involved in our lives and giving us that hope and strength, we will not be able to help other people with that. And so I just want to say also, one of my most crazy favorite things is that Christ is the king of waiting. I mean, you know, I use Abraham and Joseph, and then I was like, oh my gosh, Christ waited for years and years, and God waited for years to bring Christ in at the right time. Christ waited to start his ministry. Christ told people sometimes, it's not my time yet. When Christ was tempted and he was in dire straits and hurting physically, he did not choose to just short circuit everything that God was doing, even though he could have. He could have at any point just said, I'm out. I need a legion of angels now. And he didn't. He was the king of waiting. Like, they waited so long to bring about this perfect plan of us being able to come into a relationship with him. Can we draw close to that God who we know has suffered and waited? Can we remember when we're waiting, whoa, I have a God who died for me who waited also. Maybe I need to draw close to him and figure out what he has for me. So what will you put your hope in? Comfort, achievement, your own power, respect from others, feeling, spouse, child, or God's power, his faithful word, his loving kindness. Psalm 62 says, my soul waits in silence for God only. For my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be shaken. On God my salvation and my glory rest, the rock of my strength, My refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge to us. Are we just going to sit around waiting for our waiting to end? Or will we allow God to make us into the people he wants to make us into? Are you willing to put the thing that you want into his hand and say, I trust God? I want this. It's part of my desire, but I trust that you are a good and loving God who wants to give me good things. And even if I don't get this thing, I believe you. There's no guarantee that he'll do it the way we want him to. But we can guarantee that he will work. We can know him. We can be part of his plan. And getting what you want can lead to regret. But God's way never will. If we put our trust in him, we will never be sorry that we did that. And someday we're going to have this perishable body swallowed up with the imperishable. And we're going to meet him face to face. And we're not going to have all these worries about waiting or live in this fallen world or have these things that are so hard for us. He's going to take care of us completely in the future. Maybe we can taste a little of that now by actually allowing him to teach us how to wait, even in these difficult circumstances. Andrew Murray says, what's needed to help us to such a life is just one thing, the real knowledge and faith of God as the one only source of wisdom and goodness, as ever ready and longing much to be to us all that we can possibly require. Yes, this is the one thing we need. If we but saw our God in his love, if we but believe that he waits to be gracious, that he waits to be our life and to work all in us, how this waiting on God would become our highest joy, the natural and the spontaneous response to our hearts, to his great love and glory. If we can see him for who he is, we can begin to have a change in the way we actually learn to respond to these tough things where we are waiting and we don't have answers.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.